we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Hello, our wonderful, wonderful friends. This is America Out Loud Pulse with Peter Bregan.
And Ginger Bregan.
And I'm Peter R. Bregan, MD, for those of you who want to be impressed. And we have an impressive doctor with us today. His name is Ryan N. Cole. He's an MD. And from his background, he's a man who loves to be a physician. I mean, he just has gotten the best training. He went to the Medical College of Virginia, which is a very good school. And there he was president of the student family practice, which shows he actually cared about people, which is interesting. And then he spent 5 years training at the Mayo in Rochester, Minnesota. His residency is in anatomic and clinical pathology. And this is going to be relevant today. We are going to be talking about, in some detail with a great expert, about the adverse effects of the vaccines, how to understand them, diagnose them, and how to treat them. So he's got a lot of background there. And he is also then took a fellowship at Columbia in dermatology, and that is a top dermatology school. And he's been interested in, you know, really the stuff that guys with higher brain power than me love, like the biochemistry of things, the real detailed stuff about how things work and operate. He is the founder of Cole Diagnostics. I suspect that what he did was what so many of the best physicians in the world have done, which is he'll tell us about this at some point. When he saw what was going on with COVID-19, he decided he had to start doing some other things. Now, I don't know whether Cole Diagnostics came before COVID or after, but I know does COVID testing. He's board certified in anatomical and clinical pathology. I really want to emphasize this because he is going to give us some of the best information we're going to get on these issues of the dangers of the vaccines and really, you know, how people can be helped. In this regard, he reminds me of our mutual friend, Peter A. McCullough, MD. He's also a member of MyFreeDoctor.com, which I believe is, and I forgot to ask him about this, is a part of the whole treating COVID-19 movement. And this is what the best of the best have done, and often at great peril to themselves. I want to say that America Out Loud Pulse is a part of a 5-day-a-week program on America Out Loud. And I mentioned Peter McCullough. He has one of the days. And Peter and Ginger Bregan, we got another. And they're just really great people who are bringing scientific and medical knowledge to these issues on America Out Loud. Now, we have used the America Out Loud platform to make some discoveries and to spread other people's discoveries about some terrible current developments at the World Health Organization that we want to mention and have Dr. Cole comment on. I don't know, Ginger, do you want to pick up on that or should I keep going?
No, I think that I'd like to hear from Dr. Cole.
Okay, without my saying another word.
Well, just about. Oh,
no,
yeah.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay.
This is how it goes at the Bregan Residence.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, pleasure to be with you guys. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Tell us how you got involved in the COVID work that you're doing, because that's been such a pivotal point for so many physicians and other healthcare professionals.
Yeah, most certainly. So to the question that Dr. Bregan brought up, I've run an independent medical laboratory for 20 years now. And when I was at the Medical College of Virginia, I did some PhD work in immunology on follicular dendritic cells. I was going to be a doctor, MD, PhD, and then we had our first baby on the way. And after a year, I pulled out of my PhD track, figuring being an MD would be just good enough. So anyway, I have a background in immunology through my clinical pathology boards at Mayo. Part of that training is in virology. And then obviously a broad training in anatomic clinical surgical pathology. And then that last fellowship at Columbia was in dermatopathology. I did do 6 months in dermatology clinics, but that was a subspecialty fellowship. So the breadth of immunology, virology, and pathology, when I saw the pandemic announced, I had a good broad understanding of coronaviruses. I had studied very in-depth SARS-CoV-1. I had studied MERS. So I understood the history of coronaviruses and the acute respiratory syndromes related with these. Now, when it was announced, I thought, wait a minute, we know how these viruses behave. And I thought we had a world overreaction to it. And we had a really good lab example early on, and that was two ships, the story of two ships, the Diamond Princess and the USS Roosevelt. So if we looked carefully at the Diamond Princess, we knew the penetrance of the virus was about 20% within that population, same thing on the USS Roosevelt. And those who unfortunately succumbed to the virus was a very small percentage, and they were elderly and comorbid. On the USS Roosevelt, there was only one victim, and that was a 49-year-old diabetic. Everybody else did fine. So we really early on had a good construct and concept of what to do. And so that was kind of my early observation. And then I was extremely alarmed early on when there was the announcement of Operation Warped Speed, which I kind of jokingly call Operation Warped Greed. Because with coronaviruses, you can never vaccinate against them because of the type of virus and the mutations that always have and always occur in a spike protein. I knew it was a bad idea. We would be literally playing whack-a-mole, just trying to catch up to the next variant of the virus, which we will never be able to do. That happened in the SARS-CoV-1 animal trials, the MERS trials. That's why we never had a vaccine. So I went into the in-depth science, the biochemistry, looking at HIV with a spike protein. 40 years later, there's a reason we don't have a vaccine to that and never will, really, because of the way these families of viruses mutate. So I dove into the hardcore science, the epidemiology, the demographic studies, and then along with some of my colleagues around the country, like Dr. McCullough and Dr. Urso, the doctors in Italy, et cetera, knowing that there were pathways to treatment. The treatment, early treatment always has been in medicine the best thing to do, always would be, and always will be the best thing to do. So that was kind of my entree into it. I did a lot of educating in my community. And then in March of 21, I gave a talk at my state legislature that ended up going to millions upon millions of
people. I saw that, yes.
And I went from just being a quiet pathologist trying to educate the community to being an international educator at that point.
Yes, and you did a brilliant job. Thank you very much. You were one of the very important early voices that came up and really affirmed the other voices and affirmed each other in regards to the fallacies of the official direction things were going in trying to handle the pandemic.
Thank you. And that was the one thing that really kind of changed the mindset, not even changed, but affirmed for a lot of people. And I get this when I speak at conferences all around the country and the world. People will come up to me and say, I felt like I was on an island. I listened to your talk. It was common sense. And they thought, these are so many things that I've been thinking. It was just nice to get confirmation, and that resonated with a lot of people.
Yes, it's so important. I'd like to jump from there to talking about vaccine injury, because I hear from a number of sources and individuals around the country and the world that come and try and to communicate with Peter and I see most of that mail. And there is tremendous concern about vaccine injury and confusion about how to care for that. And is it the same thing as, are the injuries the same thing as the COVID illnesses, and either acute short-term or long-haul COVID? So if you could address those issues, it would be very helpful.
Certainly, thank you. And this is a very important question, because societally, we have, for whatever reason, waved the wand of, oh, there's no such thing. The vaccines are perfect, safe, and effective. It's not true. And so many people are injured and they're seeking help. And so many doctors, because of the mass formation, the hypnosis, are ignoring the fact that what's in front of them, they won't even allow their eyes to see what's plainly clear. And I've been working with the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation with Steve Kirsch. I'm on the board of another vaccine injury group. It is real and it isn't rare. And that's the sad aspect of it. You know, there were data that just came out in Europe, and in some countries, they're starting to acknowledge they actually have medical codes for vaccine injury. Here in the United States, we don't even allow for coding of vaccine injury. Now, Germany, the data that just came out about a week or two ago showed that up to 1 in 100 people now are vaccine injured, which is astronomical in the realms of vaccinology.
Huge.
And to your question, are all the injuries the same? No, everybody's genetically slightly different. And so some people are fine. You know, they get a shot or two or three and thankfully have no adverse reactions, at least yet. And that's kind of a complex pathway we can go down in terms of the potentiality of, you know, some of the antibodies that have formed that could harm them down the road. And we don't know. But the injuries range from reactivation of latent viruses, because the shots are dose dependent. In life, the dose makes the poison. And we knew from the Pfizer data that the all-cause mortality was actually higher in the vaccine group than in the placebo group. And in their post-marketing data and all the data they've hidden, we know that there is a lot of harm being caused, be it clotting, be it autoimmune disease, be it immune suppression, be it reactivation of cancer because of the suppression of the immune system. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that are very fatigued. Now, there's two reasons for that. The powerhouse of our body's cells, the mitochondria, are inhibited by the spike protein. So a lot of people are ending up with damaged mitochondria. Neurologically, we know there's a fair amount of brain fog. Same reason, that spike protein inhibits your respiration pathway of the cell and decreases cytochrome C, and then you don't form the energy from the cell. Again, that's a mitochondrial thing. And then the other very important thing in terms of those latent viruses, and running a medical laboratory, I've seen a lot of this, and a lot of my colleagues that treat vaccine-injured patients see a lot of waking up of Epstein-Barr virus, chronic mononucleosis. And that, again, is due to immune suppression pathways. So there are so many different pathways of injury. And this is why it's important for anybody's clinician to say, hey, you're an individual, your symptoms are this, let's do some of these lab studies and let's confirm what at the very least is triggering these individuals' reactions. One of the sad things is the lipid nanoparticle, it's a little fat, and our cell membranes in our body are fat. These lipid nanoparticles were originally designed to carry chemotherapy or gene therapy to neurons, to the brain. So we never should have used a lipid nanoparticle that crosses the blood-brain barrier, knowing that anywhere that this lipid nanoparticle goes with this little mRNA sequence, this modified RNA, it can turn any cell in our body into a spike factory. And then our immune system, when we get a spike on the surface of any of those cells in our body, now our immune system wants to attack those cells. Hageman out of Germany did a study, European Journal of Immunology, and this was peer-reviewed and published, showing that we have something called antibody-dependent cellular cytotoxicity, meaning any cell in our body making that spike is now being targeted and attacked by our own natural killer cells. So there are so many pathways to injury, and not everybody's injury is the same. And some people have mild injury, and some people have obviously very severe injury be it myocarditis, be it brain fog, be it clotting, be it death. You know, that's the sad thing too, is the death rate from this shot is off the charts compared to all vaccines historically, because this isn't a vaccine. This is a therapy with a gene. And not only, you know, has it been bad with this virus and what they did, this platform isn't for humanity. It's not a proven platform. And now these large pharmaceutical companies think they have carte blanche going forward to use lipid nanoparticles and mRNA sequences. Moderna is working on 15 different shots now. And we've already shown, I know, and we've
15 already different mRNA shots?
Correct, from RSV to flu. And I mean, this is where humanity needs to be careful, because next flu season, they're going to try to use this. And thinking, oh, see, we used it, it worked. No, it didn't. It's caused irreparable harm to hundreds of thousands, if not millions upon millions of people. And we still don't have long-term safety data. Most vaccines are 5, 10, 12, 15 years to get to a market. So we don't have that long-term surveillance. You know, really at year 5, there should only be 3,000 people in a study to where we say, okay, now we can go on to the next phase of the trial. These trials aren't even done. Anybody getting a shot is still in an experiment. They tell people that there's approved vaccines available in the United States, absolutely not.
But they aren't even being followed. Patients who receive the vaccines aren't being followed like you would follow a patient. We're almost out of time at this point. This is fascinating. Thank you, Peter.
With the first segment.
Yes, with the first segment. We've got two more to go.
When we come back, let's go some more into the death. That's something that's so important because it's really catastrophic. And into the just the really the violence of giving these to children and the cardiac problems. So let's go into that as well. And just as a quick aside, folks, our book, COVID-19, The Global Predators, is passing 100,000. I got overexcited. We expected 50 in the beginning. I mean, 50 copies. So thank you.
We thought we would store them in the garage.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products: toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
Well, welcome back, wonderful, wonderful folks out there. Dr. Cole is one of the best informed physicians we've talked to, and I want to continue with the focus on his thinking, particularly the numbers of deaths. I think the latest reported total number to the CDC was approaching 30,000 now in the U.S. And then I'd like to have him talk about this really murderous idea of an activity of giving these to children who don't need them, who should be having COVID parties, I think, instead of getting shots. And that would really help community immunity, and they'd be immune for the rest of their lives, probably, the most of these COVID things, which the vaccines just won't do. So I'd like to just go right into that, those kinds of issues with you, and continue open forum with you here.
Certainly. And it is tragic what we're seeing. I mean, approaching 30,000 deaths just in the US databases. And we do know from the 2010 Harvard Lazarus study for the government that the VAERS system, which is the best we have, and people will criticize it, but 80% of those reports are actually done by clinicians. And it's a federal crime, imprisonable if you file a false VAERS report. So it is a good red flag warning system. And the fact that we as a nation are ignoring the best red flag we have is appalling and absurd, really. And 30,000 deaths, that's probably the tip of the iceberg. Depending on whether you look at Jessica Rose's data or Steve Kirsch's data, it could be anywhere from 10 to 40 times underreported. So to allow a product to remain on the market for this long is criminal, really. And the real tragedy here, too, is the shots haven't been reformulated. The virus for the which they were designed, Wuhan, is extinct, went extinct in humanity well over a year ago. There's no data showing these shots have any efficacy for Delta, and especially not Omicron. We know with data around the world, Omicron, it actually is increased in those who have gotten two or three shots. And in Canada, we see that. In the UK data, we see that. A month or two ago, 9 out of 10 deaths were in those who had received the shots. And those who get them, if you stratify by age decile, you see higher and higher and higher rates of acquiring COVID. And this is because these shots have narrowed the immune response. There was a kind of an obscure paper on Moderna that showed those who got the shots can't form a full immune response. When you get a shot, you're only getting like the half of the individual, 12% of the virus. You don't form an immune response to the whole virus. And so you put blinders on the horse, as it were. You commit what's called original antigenic sin, where our immune system's looking for a spike and looking for a spike, but can't see the rest of the ball of the virus and the envelope and the membranes and the nucleocapsid. And we know from actual lab data that those who get these shots, their body won't form those strong, full, broad antibodies. And to the point of the children, this is an absolute tragedy. And I, in my medical opinion, in my ethical opinion, to give any world the shot is nothing short of child abuse. These children, to your point, and you're absolutely right, Dr. Bregan, they survived COVID statistically at 100%. They would have been the way and the bridge to getting this entire disaster over with so much faster, quicker, and sooner. They're not vectors of the disease. We know from all the studies around the world that the children weren't the primary spreaders of this disease. And so CDC data, and again, CDC data is always behind, showed a few months ago that 75% of the United States children have already had COVID. If you have had a disease, you do not get a shot for that disease. And we do know from, you know, the previous segment, this lipid nanoparticle, it's like garlic. It goes everywhere. So the studies have shown, yeah, it does. So it goes to the bone marrow. It goes to the spleen. It goes to liver. It goes to the brain. It goes, importantly and sadly, to the ovaries. So we are giving a shot to a generation that does not need the shot, most of which who are recovered from the disease, taking an experimental nanoparticle, an experimental mRNA that doesn't break down. Dr. Roltgen at Stanford did a study published in Cell that shows this modified mRNA still present and making spikes 60 days after the shot. Mm. At that point, the study was stopped so they could publish. We know from Dr. Burkhardt's autopsy studies in Germany that spike was deposited 128 days after a shot in one of his autopsy patients. We know that this a normal mRNA in our body, you know, we're making signals all day, these little messages to tell our cells to make proteins. Those break down in minutes to hours. So to have a synthetic sequence pushed into our body that we know at least 2, 3, 4 months later is still making a spike protein Then the other thing that we take into account, normally we think if someone dies in a few days after a shot, maybe it could be vaccine related. But with this mechanism, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, it could still be that shot causing these death pathways. And some of these deaths are immediate because there's polyethylene glycol 2000 in this lipid nanoparticle. Well, 70% of Americans already have an antibody against polyethylene glycol. We're pre-primed to have an allergic reaction to this lipid. And some people go into anaphylactic shock. Yeah. And then the other crime in all of this, and this is the FDA, and as you know, and I'll plug your book because you put that last segment. I've read it front to back. You know, 100,000 copies, that should be 100 million copies. Everybody needs to read this book and understand really the bigger picture of what's happening to us as a society. But going back to the regulatory agencies, and you've seen how corrupt they are in this entire process, they authorized these based on vaccine requirements. That's a killed protein or a killed virus or a killed part of a pathogen, an inert protein that doesn't replicate. What they didn't do, and they should have done, was applied gene therapy requirements to an injected gene into the body. That would include the biodistribution. Where do these go? Toxicity, reproductive toxicity, mutagenicity, all of these things and many other things. But they didn't apply the gene criteria to these shots. They applied the old vaccine protein criteria to these.
So it was really it was like a bait and switch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. It was saying that it should be approved as a vaccine, but in fact, the proper criteria would be gene therapy criteria for approval, and that wasn't done.
Correct.
Oh, so it was the misnaming of it, calling it a vaccine.
Oh, and it's not a vaccine because a vaccine gives you immunity, and you see that the CDC changed the definition of vaccine right prior to the rollout so that they could get away with this bait and switch. And these shots don't prevent acquisition of disease, carrying the disease, transmitting the disease. We know studies out of Wisconsin, Vietnam, California show that those who get the shot carry equal or higher volumes of virus, because if you get the shot, you don't make a very important antibody. I call them like little mops in your tears, your nose, your throat, called secretory IgA. Those who've had COVID and recovered, they have a lot of IgA in these secretions. And so you can, and you make, you know, tens of thousands of these antibodies per minute. So you can bind and neutralize the virus there. Those who get the shot, you get a shot in the arm, your body makes an IgG, but you don't make the secretory IgA. This is why the vaccinated are the viral spreaders. And so I went to the symphony last night, and it was stupid because, well, it was Beethoven's ninth. So it was, you know, 198th anniversary of Beethoven's ninth. Didn't want to miss it. To sit there and see people still masked the entire, well, it was stupid because, and as Peter McCullough points out, if it's absurd, then it's probably wrong. So the string section has masks on, the wind section doesn't, the soloists don't have masks on, the rest of the choir do. In order to get in, I either had to show a negative test or have a vaccine card. That vaccine card now is pointless because the vaccinated can be the super spreaders of the disease because they can't neutralize the virus. And we know they don't neutralize Omicron because the shots don't cover Omicron. So we're really in a circus of the absurd at this point. So being a hardcore scientist and understanding all these mechanisms and looking at all the studies and seeing much of this in the laboratory, it's just hard because what scratches their head, and we can assertively say that the game is over. Majority of people have had COVID. Are there people who will still get sick? Yes. Do we need to really start focusing on those who are now vaccine injured and or those who have a narrow immune response and are immunologically still prone to a potentially bad outcome with the disease because we suppress their immune system with 2, 3, or 4 shots?
Right.
By the way, folks, if you hear a kind of a change in the volume of Dr. Cole's voice, we're having a thunderstorm here in Ithaca.
I thought it was my border collie barking.
No, we heard the That's all right. We have two dogs. They're being very quiet.
Oh, well, very good.
That's lucky for us. Actually, yes. They could be howling. So it's a beautiful storm out. We can see it out the bay window. But
I hear the rumble.
But there's a little thunder. Yeah.
And it's been going on since about the third or fourth or fifth minute or so. So
into every life, a little rain must fall.
Right. But the Dr. Cole's voice is very strong and even if it isn't sounding that way, because it doesn't sound that way to me. And it's directly related to the storm. We have only really a few minutes left. This has been an incredible
6.5 minutes, this segment, and then one
discussion.
More.
Okay. And could you say a little bit more about the vaccinated people becoming super spreaders? Because when I first heard about that, I thought, well, that seems really unlikely they'll become super spreaders or spreaders. You know, maybe they'll have something going on. But you're directly saying it, and I trust you. So say a little more with the basis for that conclusion.
Certainly. So because of where the virus comes in, you know, it's silly, you know, all this alcohol and just drying our skin. This isn't a hand virus. This is a respiratory virus. So where it enters into the body is in the nose, the mouth and throat, and the eyes, our mucosal membranes. So really, that's where you want to have an immediate strong immune response in order to keep the virus from replicating. And this is where, you know, Dr. McCullough's protocol of nasal rinses with some povidone iodine or a little hydrogen peroxide and mouth gargles, you know, when one's in a high exposure setting, is very important and useful in neutralizing the virus. And not just for COVID. This is beautiful. We've learned this going forward for common colds and influenza, et cetera. This is a very useful, simple, very inexpensive treatment with data behind it, German data, India data, et cetera. So the vaccinated, so this is to your question, Dr. Bragan, the vaccinated don't make that little special secretory antibody. So when the virus lands in the nasal passages or in the throat, those who have had COVID are making lots of this neutralizing antibody that can bind and mop it. So you may get a sniffle for a day, because some people did get Omicron after having had Alpha or Delta in the earlier variants. But because of the breadth of their immune response, recognizing the whole ball of the virus, all the potential proteins, not just that little spike, their immune system clears it very quickly. And the best way to keep a strong immune response, and this is one of the simplest messages, and many people in the world know me for this message, is having a normal vitamin D level. Mm-hmm. Vitamin D talks to your little CD4 T cells, which talk to your B cells to say, maintain good immune memory, in addition to training your memory T cells. It, you know, we hear in the news this week, and again, it's absurdity, is, oh gosh, the vaccine efficacy is fading with each round of boosters, better get another booster. A first grader could tell you that doesn't make sense. What we should be saying is augment your natural health, wellness, immunity, cut the unhealthy foods, cut the unhealthy inputs into the body, boost, optimize your immune health. But the vaccinated, because they can't neutralize it there, now basically have a garden of virus growing there. Now, because of their shots, maybe they have a less symptoms and they think they're fine. They may think, oh, it's allergies, that just have a sniffle, but they have tens of millions, if not billions of copies of the virus, and they go around spreading it. And again, there are clinical studies proving this. It's not conjecture. We've quantified the amount of virus. We've quantified in the vaccinated how much they're carrying.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I have never quite understood that as clearly as you've just explained it. So as a non-vaccinated human being, I had to take my mom to the ER yesterday. She's fine. Thank goodness. She passed a little bitty kidney stone, but it caused her a lot of pain for a while.
Sure.
And it was very reassuring to be at the ER. They were very good. But we were there for 5 hours, and it hadn't occurred to me that I should perhaps do some oral and nasal hygiene after I was there in order to clear up any exposure to the proteins that might be floating around in the ER, because I hadn't understood that that I hadn't understood the super spreader concept. I'd heard it. But again, I wasn't. That's fascinating that this is the case. So it's a good idea to go ahead and use Dr. McCullough's protocol in regards to clearing the mouth and clearing the nasal passages and so forth. I think either, even as a vaxxed person or as an unvaxxed person, is that correct?
Absolutely. And that's a very important point you make, because if you've had the shots, obviously you're still susceptible to getting the virus and Omicron. And we've seen a lot of those vaccinated actually perform worse in their clinical outcomes. So early treatments, nasal rinses, all of these things are for everybody. And, you know, I don't do it chronically because you do have a microbiome of all your different flora in your nose and mouth. You don't want to sterilize that. But in those settings, when you've been in a high exposure setting, it's not a bad idea to do for a day or two.
Excellent. That's wonderful.
We're talking with Dr. Ryan N. Cole. When we come back at the beginning of the last segment, I'd like Dr. Cole to describe how to get in touch with him, make sure we get that on the record. And also, we will talk some about this catastrophic event that's going on right now with literally the danger, the imminent danger of the World Health Organization being able to dictate to the United States of America and other nations how we should behave when they identify in our country a health emergency, even if we don't think we have one. So I want to get into that some, and perhaps to have you say a few more words about deaths. I think we don't pay enough attention to what we're learning about how deadly this virus is, including the insurance company rates now, that where more and more deaths of healthy people are going up. So we got a bunch of really interesting things to come back to shortly.
I want to put in a big word for healthy cell supplements. The GI tract is not functioning normally in long COVID syndrome. I'm convinced of it. There are multiple studies. We need a much better absorbed set of nutraceutical and vitamin products for long COVID syndrome, and that's Healthy Cell. They have an entire line that's safe and effective, can help people through the long COVID syndrome. I found the best way to use Healthy Cell products is use them every day, not on and off, on and off. Take them every day consistently. The Immune Super Boost, Focus and Memory, and the REM Sleep Supplement all have powerful effects in long COVID syndrome. Go to HealthyCell.com. And in the promo code, type in Out Loud for 20% off your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural, too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Surely, if you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Well, welcome back again. This is Peter Bregan.
And Ginger Bregan.
The team. The team that has now been together for five or six shows.
At least.
And you are getting stronger and stronger.
Well, thank you.
It's amazing. It's just marvelous. People are getting to see why I look so smart. I'm really so glad people are getting to see you and talk with you and know you. It's inspiring to live with you. And we have such a blessed opportunity and relationship.
Yeah.
So let's talk some about the deaths. I want to say that I've done a lot of testifying in court, actually, over the years about these reporting systems, and I've studied them, as Dr. Cole. And at the minimum, and just emphasizing what he said earlier, at the minimum, if you get one death reported, at the minimum, it's going to represent 10 real deaths from the drugs. But that's the minimum. Some of the studies show that the reports only represent 1 in 100 of incidents. And then add to that that doctors and nurses are terrified of even admitting that there is any kind of danger to these vaccines. They'll actually deny it to the face of parents and other doctors and people, physicians like me, who want to just try and chat with them. They get all freaky and they don't want to talk. And so that means that the numbers being sent in are very small compared to what we might usually get. At least that's a considerable theory. So it's entirely possible that we're really having hundreds of thousands of deaths in the U.S. today from the vaccines. And McCullough started talking about a long time back with me about how the vaccine deaths were going to exceed the coronavirus deaths. And that's made worse by something we haven't talked about, maybe we don't need to get into today, which is that the deaths we do have mostly could have been prevented if we'd had proper early treatment. Just want to get that in with cheap and inexpensive and very helpful medications.
Let's just say very briefly that you can find early treatment directions and protocols on truthforhealth.org, which is a foundation that Dr. McCullough is the lead medical director of, and Dr. Lee Valit is the founder and in charge of it. And it's providing a lot of services. Dr. Cole, I think that you may also know of another resource for early treatment protocols. Is that the case?
Yeah, FLCCC.net, that's Dr. Corey, Dr. Merrick's group. They have early treatment. The World Council for Health has some pages for both treatment and vaccine injury. And I know, like you said, Dr. McCullough and Blett, at Truth for Health, they have their protocols as well.
Great.
So you know, I want you to go on now, and I've said what I needed to say, and talk about, talk about treatment for the vaccine injuries. Talk about treatment for vaccine injuries.
So the number one treatment is don't get another shot. The dose makes the poison. If you come over and I say, hey, you know, here's some scrambled eggs and breakfast. I'm going to sprinkle a little arsenic on your scrambled eggs. You would look at me like quizzically and say, no, you're not. But if I did that, I'd say, well, you're going to go to the ER, you're going to have a tummy ache and maybe lose a little hair. But if you come over 4 or 6 weeks later for your booster dose of scrambled eggs and I sprinkle arsenic again, you would say, no, I'm not doing that again, because you know the dose makes the poison. It's going to become worse and worse until you die. So the number one key treatment is don't get another booster. It is the wrong shot for the wrong virus, wrong protein, wrong shot, wrong virus, wrong type of therapy that is definitely unproven. Optimizing one's immune health. Now, can one clear that spike protein out of circulation or turn off that gene? Hard to say. We don't have any proof that there's not a single study in the world showing when the body stops making the spike protein with that synthetic sequence that's injected. Dr. Bruce Patterson and his studies show the spike circulating up to 15 months. Now, there's an HIV drug in some of these patients which will bind and turn off some of the Pac-Man cells, the macrophages. It's a drug called Maraviroc. And the ligand that it'll bind to, the CCR5 ligand, it can help in some of these chronic vaccine-injured patients and or long-haul patients as well. Some of the other treatments depend on what you find in your lab data. if your mitochondria are damaged, the heart is damaged, neural fog. One fascinatingly good therapy is hyperbaric oxygen therapy because it can help regrow mitochondria. And I have a young friend here, Kyle Warner, mountain bike, three-time national mountain biking champion. He did his duty and felt like he was doing the right thing getting Modernas. He was injured, myocarditis, pericarditis. And I can speak about this because he's spoken publicly and he's a good friend. But after, I think he did 40 full hyperbaric sessions and he's doing quite well. Still has a little bit of fatigue, but he's doing so much better than he was. Optimizing nutrition, our American diet, I say, let thy food be thy medicine, let thy medicine be thy food. We have so much sugar, we have so much processed foods, we have so many inflammatory oils in our diet, be it corn, canola, soy, et cetera. And so just, and high fructose corn syrup in a lab setting, if I want to make an animal model of deficient vitamin D, I feed those animals a high fructose corn syrup diet. It dehydroxylates your vitamin D. So this soda culture that we have in America, that's all high fructose corn syrup, it literally is suppressing your vitamin D, which is literally suppressing your immune system. So again, optimizing your immune health, that's one way. There's no easy one answer for anyone. If one has persistent spike and you can prove it in certain laboratory studies, then there are, you know, some of those early treatments that do bind and inhibit the spike from binding to your receptors if you still have that in your body to at least halt the process from going any further.
Ginger, more thoughts? You're really on top of a lot of
I found that your comment about high fructose corn syrup, I don't drink soda at all anymore, but I've heard that high fructose corn syrup can be an issue, but I had not heard that it could suppress or eliminate vitamin D from the body. And that is astonishing because I always thought that the loss of vitamin D mostly had to do with where you were located in relationship to the equator. So you get a lot more sun exposure down in Florida, for instance, than you do up in the Finger Lakes area of New York, where we live. And so this is a whole nother way that Americans don't get enough vitamin D, even when they do have the opportunity to have sun exposure. It's so important. Thank you.
Correct. You bet. Do you want me to kind of talk about the death issue? Because I think that's critically important.
Yeah, I'd be happy to have you talk
about it. It's really important.
This is the huge concern. So, you know, it's hard to get doctors or some of these big systems to admit to death or vaccine injury. But when Wall Street is hemorrhaging money, then you know there's a problem. So the actuaries for these large insurance companies, when they started looking and seeing within their insurance companies claims of increased death and disability claims to the tune of billions of dollars, they thought, Houston, we have a problem. And indeed they do. So Ed Dowd was one of the first to come out with this data. And I've been on some panels with Dr. Malone, Dr. Corey, Dr. Cariotti, myself, Dr. McCullough, talking with these insurance executives, going over the mechanisms of injury so they can understand why they're seeing what they're seeing. And so in the 18 to 64-year-old age group in quarter three and quarter four of the year 2021, and what happened then? Mandatory shots. That was when mandates really got pushed. In that 18 to 64-year-old group, this Indiana insurance company executive came out and said, look, we've seen a 40% increase in claims. Well, a 10% increase in claims would be a 200-year catastrophe in that industry. And they had a three sigma change over above that 10%. And if you look at some of the other excess mortality bands in that age 25 to 34 in quarter three, there was 181% excess mortality, age 35 to 44, a 217%, 45 to 54, 208%. The data is astronomical. And then after the Indiana life company came forward, a bunch of the other Wall Street companies came forward, as well as a large one in Germany. And the executive that reported in Germany after reporting it got demoted, of course, and silenced. But you can't hide actuarial data because they have a fiduciary obligation to their investors to report actuarial data. Now, you can try to hide the VAERS data. CDC told us on President's Day that they were only reporting a small amount of the data over the last 2 years. That came out in the New York Times that they were obscuring and hiding, and you know, the Centers for Deception and Confusion, or whatever you want to call them. But when you get to the money and the actuaries, you can't hide the data. And the data are clear. These young age groups have an astronomical rate of death and disability, and it correlates with the time the mandates rolled out. And it's continuing. I was on a large podcast in Australia this week, and they've had a 22 to 28% increase in all-cause mortality after their boosters rolled out in January. And they're waiting for the February, March, April data to come in. But it was after their booster that, boom, 22 to 28% all-cause excess death. Dr. Pantazatos at Columbia did this very same thing, did a broad study, and in the vaccinated, excess death is up. Norman Fenton out of the UK, same thing, did analysis on the UK data in the vaccinated group, excess death at higher rates. It is clear, it is statistically clear, it is a signal that is in front of our faces if people will simply look.
This correlates, I think, with the information that Dr. Vliet has been bringing out in regards to the pilots who are in that age group. They're somewhere within their early 20s up into their early 60s for the most part. And the pilots are now starting to speak out, and she has interviewed some of them in regards to the numbers of them who are experiencing chest pains and various cardiac events that post-vaccine, having been completely healthy up until that time. So that actually, I think, without looking at pilot data per se, if you're looking at that age group and saying there's a 20% or greater increase in mortality, that can be generally applied to any population, pilots, ship captains, whomever, any of these population, military people, any of these populations who have been forced into getting vaccines in order to doctors, in order to maintain their work and employment. I had a question about actuaries in regards to children. I don't think that there are as many tables because there isn't a financial connection with children. So we may not see actuarial data in the teenagers who have received vaccines. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's unfortunately true. Now, we do know from other nations, say the Hong Kong study, one in 2,600 children between the ages of 12 and 17 had myocarditis. We know, looking at the Big 12 Football League, they did a study showing half of myocarditis is silent. Now, there's no such thing as mild myocarditis. And myocarditis leads to scarring, can lead to heart failure. And the 10-year outcomes with myocarditis are statistically very bad. So we're pushing a shot onto children. You're right, we're not going to see those data as readily. It's true that children are dying at a higher rate. The amount of reports that, you know, we see and get, and I get some autopsies from around the country, the tissue to review, it's really sad and unfortunate. And these are children that are at zero risk. And it's 100% risk, zero reward at this point. Wrong shot, wrong virus. Dangerous platform anyway, lipid nanoparticle and a synthetic RNA. And most kids are recovered. So we are literally, and if you get a shot after having had the disease, you're at a 2 to 4 times increased risk of adverse reactions having recovered. The CDC says, oh gosh, if you get a shot after having COVID, you get super immunity. And I say, nonsense, that's like Superman, it doesn't exist. You know, it's, you know, it just, it's immunologic nonsense. And what these government agencies are doing again, it's nothing short of criminal. You know, they're the spreaders and purveyors of misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation, not we scientists and physicians. These are medical technocrats and bureaucrats who have never seen a COVID patient. They're pushing policy that's usually 6 to 9 months behind the data. And it's policy that doesn't make any immunologic, virologic, vaccinologic sense whatsoever. It's really infuriating as a well-educated, well-experienced physician.
Have you or anyone else done a recent review on all this amazing data that you described, learning about from your research and the panel discussions you've been on? It would be such a contribution to all of our work and to the public if there were a column.
A column, even, so that we could share it with the public.
Yeah, you know, I've worked with some statisticians kind of behind the scenes. And so I'm kind of a data aggregator, but I'm on a plane about every weekend speaking somewhere. So I need a clone or two just to keep up with myself.
It would be so some, valuable for you to do a write-up on it.
I need to. And I'm working on my book as well. Bobby Kennedy's publisher reached out to me and said, Ryan, where's your book? I need to help you get it out there.
Yeah, that's so wonderful.
Oh, that's great.
But the data is a moving target because we get more and more every day. Yeah. And that's a great question because there's not any one good place. Yeah.
Well, we need an essay. I mean, I think we need an essay with links like yours.
Yes.
That would help you with your book. It would help me with our new book, which is quite a ways away. It would help just with everything. It would help us on future shows.
My book is going to be called COVID-19, A Postmortem.
Oh, well done. Yes, that's great.
This has been one of the most informative conversations I've ever listened to and participated in. Ryan Cole, doctor, thank you so much. Folks, for the latest of what's going on with the upcoming May 22nd vote that could turn the World Health Organization into a dictatorship, go to our website, bregan.com. You're going to be shocked if you've been there before. It's a totally new website. And you'll see at the top our essay on how the Biden administration is giving away our national sovereignty. We need to humiliate these people and get them to withdraw the changes they are making to the regulations of WHO, basically removing restrictions and making Tedros a dictator. Again, our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, gives you so much basis for what you've seen going on and what you've heard talked about today. Thank you, Dr. Cole. This has been just an amazing time with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And we have a sign-off that we're going to use tonight for the first time. Love life. Love freedom. Love each other. And I want to say, love your nearest and dearest.
Aw, thank you.